In Benedict and Nancy Friedman's novel, Miss Mike, Meg Woodson says to her 12-year-old daughter, Peg, suffering from cystic fibrosis, "Know deep down that you're worth any trouble you cause." "You never told me that before," Peg replies, her face cracking into tiny pieces of stained glass, each piece glistening with moisture. Here the focus is not so much on the caregiver, but on the one receiving care. Do we believe we are worth any trouble we cause? Perhaps the word trouble is not the appropriate one. The idea that needing to be cared for causes trouble for others. Yet I know there is deep inside me a fierce sense of independence that I really don't need anybody's help. I am capable of standing on my own two feet. I can tough it out through almost any predicament, drawing on my own spiritual resources. Sound familiar? In my years as a minister, I have heard many people in hospital or nursing home, in office or home, worry about taking my time, troubling their loved ones, worried about consuming care. It is almost as if they thought there was a certain amount of caring stored up, and they didn't want to consume more than their fair share. In this, we are heirs to our Unitarian sage, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and his philosophy of self-reliance. In that essay, he wrote, and I warn you, I do inclusive language, "Welcome evermore to gods and people is the self-helping person. Our love goes out to her and embraces him because she did not need it. It is only as a person puts off all foreign support and stands alone that I see him or her to be strong and to prevail." While Emerson actually was writing more theologically than psychologically, he helped create a spirit of rugged individualism and rabid independence in all things. Ours is a religious tradition that stresses self-reliance in creating one's faith while forgetting that it is in the communal give and take of ideas that we build our best theology. Ours is a religious tradition that emphasizes developing our own spiritual resources while forgetting that none of us know enough. Ours is a religious tradition that celebrates independence of thought while forgetting that our intellectual insights are often sparks from the fires of others. Mulan Kundantra, the novelist, wrote, "I think, therefore I am," is a statement in intellectual who underrates toothaches. It is in dealing with the toothaches of life that we most realize that life is as much about feelings as thought. That life is as much about feelings as thought. It is a challenge of the spiritual life, then, to learn how to be cared for as well as how to care for others. We need beware discounting ourselves when we find ourselves unable to cope with our own fate alone. There is nothing to be ashamed of in needing other people. Absolutely nothing. In fact, we honor them by relying on them. It demonstrates our regard for them and their worth, even as they care for us and affirm our worth. We all need the feeling of being necessary. The problem of feeling worthy is being in the problem of feeling worthy and being cared for is all wrapped up in our sense of identity. Who am I? If our answer to the question ignores pain and suffering, failure and death, and signifies only health, achievement, victory, and celebration, it is incomplete. Without realizing that we are flawed creatures who need constant mending, we deny our full humanity. We deny who we really are, human beings like all the rest. Furthermore, caring is reciprocal. We are caring and being cared for at the same time. There is a wonderfully warm and deep meaning when two people are embraced and caring for one another. I've seen it in ICU hospital units as people stroke the brow of a loved one. There is something beautifully poetic in this act of tenderness which affirms the worth of both. I'd like to share with you a story. Actually, my first church, and it was in Meadville, Pennsylvania, which is where Allegheny College is. And I'd met Dick Brown early on, and he was a physics professor at the college, but Dick was dying of cancer. And during the Easter season, he ended up in the hospital. And he told me this story, that an evangelist was going through the hospital and up and down the aisles and giving away lilies and would go on, and Dick's a very patient person and a nice person, would go on and on about the lily and about the resurrection and all that kind of stuff. And he waited until the evangelist was done. And then Dick said to the evangelist, "I'm sorry, young man, I think of that as recycling." The other thing about Dick is, and I was able to be a part of this, he died surrounded by his family in his own home. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. The relationship of the years renders us equals before the unfairness of life. There's an old Jewish tale of the sorrow tree. On the day of judgment, each person will be allowed to hang all their unhappiness on the branch of the great tree of sorrows. After each has found a limb from which their own miseries may dangle, they all walk slowly around the tree. All are to search for a set of sufferings they would prefer to those that they have hung on the tree. And in the end, each one freely chooses to reclaim their own personal set of sorrows rather than those of another. Each one leaves the tree wiser than when they came. It happens. I was part of a group. I grew up a spiritual direction group about healing your losses. And I grew up in a violent alcoholic family. And I thought I had real troubles. But there were two women in the group who had been raped by their father. You never know. And what we're capable of is, well, it's amazing. But that, I still can't wrap my brain around that. But those who suffer often become teachers to those who would comfort. It has been my privilege to share something of the dying process with a number of people over the years. I tell them that they teach me in a way that they face their suffering. They're like pioneers in a country I have not yet visited, but I will one day inhabit. We do not need to look only at ultimate things like death to understand how the care receiver teaches. How the care receiver teaches. I learn from so many other people who have been assaulted by the unfairness of life. I marvel at how they accept their own pain, their pain of job loss, separation and divorce, estrangement of children, how they're able, in spite of all this, to live full lives, how they are able to model for their family and friends how to take the bitter with the sweet. I think of all the beds where sick people have helped me understand a little more about suffering with courage and dying with dignity. I think of all the people who have come in tears, taking me into their holy of holies, and helped me understand a little more about hell on earth. What do I conclude from all this? That it is foolish to think of ourselves as only caregivers and care receivers. For we are simultaneously and forever both. We teach each other how to cope with the fundamental unfairness of life with grace. Nicholas Waldersdorf, in A Lament for a Son, his own, writes, "I shall look at the world through tears. Perhaps I shall see things that dry-eyed I could not see. I shall try to keep the wound from healing. In recognition of our living still in the old order of things, I shall try to keep it from healing in solidarity with those who sit beside me on humanity's mourning bench." What a beautiful choice of words, humanity's mourning bench. As we sit together on humanity's mourning bench, we need three things, I think. We need a sense of our own basic worth, regardless of our situation. Whether we think we have life by the tail or the other way around, our situation does not change our value. We are worthy no matter what. No matter what happens to us, we are worthy. We need to be connected to a community. No one of us can make it alone. We are whistling in the wind if we think any of us has so mastered life that we can cope with our frailty and finitude by ourselves. It is good to give and it is good to receive. Blessed are those who understand this truth. We need a horizon of our thought and feeling that lifts us beyond the immediate, to see our lives in cosmic perspective, beacons of brief fire against the darkness. Our lives are not lost in the great mystery of birth and death and all that lies between. It is not lost. In fact, the people that knew you carry you on. I leave you with a story. A woman dreams she walks into a brand new shop in the marketplace, and to her surprise, she finds God behind the counter. "What do you sell here?" she asks. "Everything your heart desires," answers God. Hardly daring to believe what she's hearing, the woman decides to ask for the best things a human being could wish for. "I want peace of mind and love and happiness and wisdom and freedom from fear," she says. And then, as an afterthought, she adds, "Not just for me, for everyone on earth." God smiles. "I think you've got me wrong," God says. "We don't sell fruits here, only seeds." Blessings upon us all. Our benediction. In the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. John Lennon and Paul McCartney.